choreographer, modern dancer in Germany from 1940. So it's kind of sort of part of fascism. It's really very interesting. Yeah, she's very, very excited about what she does, and she mentioned to me that.
Do you have to teach you?
Yeah, I teach the weapons of course. And we also have our tactics. We don't use textbook. We work from primary sources, basically. We read Plato's Republic, Aristotle's Republic, Machiavelli's Prince of Discourse, Hobbes' Philosophy, obviously the City of God. It's a real primary course, primary source.
Did they set it up like that, or did you just, they told you what they wanted to do?
It's about 80% fixed. You know, I'm meant to teach. All these things I have listed from God, I have to teach. I also put in some stuff on the Middle Ages. I put a lot of stuff on the Middle Ages. I have to put in some of the texts I put in. Very good. It's called, it's by Susan Moore, okay, I am. I can't remember, but anyway, Susan. It's a present paper I could call Women in Western Court Plot. She has a chapter of Plato, a chapter of Aristotle, a couple of chapters of stuff on Mill. Yeah, it really makes a difference. It makes them step back and into two on the text. It makes them understand that the Western tradition is a big, complicated thing. And they can like bite off with this little chew on it over the years if they want to.
Well, that's an interesting way of teaching, I can say. If you adopt it, it's not a textbook, just a novel.
Yeah. Yes.
Do that, and then they read the text, but they haven't evolved all the text.
So I get, you know, I start the course with a lecture on the poems, explaining what it is that they're about. And I've been reading a lot of philosophy in order to be able to present the questions of the text in the right kind of context. So it's not just sort of ideas of history, but it's also here's kind of ideas about the work internally, here's kind of logic, here's about this question, here's what people thought of you, here's what they thought of them. And sort of try to get them to actually assess an idealistic range of life for the public, both in terms of its positive content and, you know, the sort of negative implication of, you know, what Popper calls it as egalitarianism. So, I mean, the thing that's interesting about my classes here that I've never had before is it the most diverse bunch of people I've ever had. Yeah, I've got a girl in a class who's really like a very bright sort of prep school type kid, a couple of kids like that, and then a whole bunch of these kids for whom Columbia is throwing a rope that they can like climb out of.
See, that's a big problem. A lot of these institutions claim that they need to help working class kids and minorities.
Because a lot of people sink that job. Yeah.
And that's really very simple.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, these kids are an interesting bunch. I mean, there's the thing that's good about this class is that nobody can kind of get up and just say, you know, John Doolittle is the worst. Which is something that, there are so many times when I have to sort of sit there and provide a critique for a class that can't pull it out of its own experience. It's not like, you know, my kids have experience of, you know, all sort of counter philosophies of Nietzsche or Marx or whatever, but there's something in their lives that tells them that liberalism isn't working and that they've got to look elsewhere. And there's just, I feel like a lot of them have a real desire to be looking outside the standard prescription, the dictionary of perceived ideas that they want to look beyond. And that
very determined.
Yeah, it's great. Because that impulse is what makes it work. And you know, I can work on the writing and stuff. They come to me in the office hours and also speak on the office. The interesting thing about paper. They don't get that if they speak on paper, and they'll be fine. You know, they sort of think of writing some third abstract entity that has to be master. I'd rather have them go to the other extreme, put it in the book.
I wanted to ask you, I don't want to change, but I don't want to forget this. You don't agree then to Shaw?
I'm bothered by their whole way of looking at things. As, I mean, I really think that they start with what we have, what the local fund is in 1972, when there were these, you know, highly structured bargaining organizations that French labor created itself with, that negotiated the state, and the demonstrations, all kind of worker demonstrations happen in response to, you know, these organizations' perception of what the situation is and what they can gain. And I'm just struck when I read, like, this whole account, I mean, I kind of pull it together out of these different sources. When I finally put it together, I thought, you know, organization just had nothing to do with how this worked. The progress and process of the struggle itself generated an organization. You know, the five of you who became the leaders, she shows up the second day of the strike wearing a red flag.
Well, you see, I attended this international conference on the European Yeah, and this was what you're saying, you know. In fact, a lot of the from this one didn't arrive at the position of being involved, but were spontaneous afterwards, some of them became free.
Yes.
But much of it was not really from the official trade union that was far too early to stop. And that was one of the big consensus.
There's a thing that Turner talked about at the end of the book, which talks about how organization precedes any kind of real demonstration of working class strength. And I don't think that is just not true. That in fact, that moments of worker militancy, they come out of someplace else. And the relationship between the organization and the working class is always very, very complicated. I remember thinking when I was a kid that it was sort of weird that my grandmother never belonged. You know, she had this real, she worked in the ordnance plant and then this, you know, steel factory and stuff. Why didn't she belong to me? It didn't make any sense to me. But, you know, now I sort of think maybe it didn't make sense. Maybe you kind of looked at her.
Well, I mean, I think it varies a lot. I mean, a lot of women, they too often wanted to stay good and wait for this because they didn't know anything. But you have to have a certain amount of elements of the French saying, we'd be nice to have children. I mean, they're not always bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, it varies.
Yeah, there's something that never came to that I can bring up, but that I have written on the back of it, which is the figures for training and participation in France.
But it doesn't mean that the union has been effective. Because in France, as with the party, the Communist Party and the CGT, it was only people who were really active militants who joined them. The rest of the people might vote for it, but they told them to. But they didn't feel, I mean, along with membership, with this idea that you must be an active militant.
Yeah. Yes.
And so, whereas here, people join trade unions.
And have a very passive.
That's right. But there, only the most active. And it didn't mean.
And that's true for all kinds of organizations.
Yeah. Right. It didn't mean that these people were influenced by the union, that they wouldn't follow its full serious dictate. I mean, it was the same. Okay. So, rather than, I don't know, I think which word it is. But you can't equate union membership with. Parents or followers of the policy necessary.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, I think that the fact that women kind of drifted in and out of syndicalist meetings indicates that they were looking for something.
Yes.
And where I don't think they were finding it there. I mean, I think that union meetings could, at times of upheaval, it seems like there'd be a lot more meetings, and that things would happen that more people find kind of a source of organization or inspiration or structure or something. Sometimes living in it. But the thing that strikes me about the 1970s, for example, and I perhaps can differentiate it from in 1918, where I came in the first even a little lower. They're much more involved in the organization. But in 1917, they just do this thing on their own accord. And I'm fascinated by that. And I think that you see a lot of that during the First World War and a couple of years following in 1919, 1920. You have a lot of situations where workers are acting out of their experience, having to do with the war, having to do with the condition of the factory, having to do with the whole set. And you always get the sense of stored up frustration, mm-hmm. you know, stupid war they sacrificed, and the organizations just can't quite keep up with them. And they keep trying to. And I mean, the more I read about them, the more I feel like this is an organization that's trying to, in some sense, make sense of or intellectually conquer something that is just beyond them. And sometimes I think that's also what's happening when, you know, the women just get fed up. I mean, in some ways, the state, by establishing this minimum wage in 1917, structures the demand. Suddenly, the state says women should make one frame for this job and 90 frames. It wasn't, but somehow, they thought it was, and they had their employers went behind them.
Oh yes, no, I wasn't disputing that. I was just saying that it sounded like such a big deal, but it wasn't even that much really. It was not, it was just a suggestion.
Exactly. And that's the other thing when I'm doing the French British comparison, you know, there's this whole tradition of planning the SCL in France, and it was state being involved in the economy. Whereas, you know, Britain is the night watch of the state, laissez-faire. And then during the war, the British government is hooks right into those businesses, and it's taxing profits, and it's doing all this stuff. It's really structuring the government. It's really pushing things. In fact, the government's just like, you know, please help us win the war. We'll do anything. And the business we should do it right. It's such a paradoxical thing when you the way people look at the two states. There's this whole flip over. You know, and the French people get pissed off because there's a way in which French business is just robbing the small. And the whole profits thing, the anxious profits thing. The Senate's trying to work on a taxation policy in 1970, and they were succeeding.
The trade unions were saying that you are asking us to make all the sacrifices because you're not asking the industry to make any sacrifices.
Yeah. And I wonder sometimes also about the way in which the war creates a situation of temporarily privileged people. Obviously business gains a lot, but the idea of people in the war industry relative to other industries suddenly the privileged class in the war. Certainly Britain that's true for the men for so long.
Well, as you know, the French
were
laws that were passed, really there was such a huge crime that we moving all made it easier to send out.
Yeah, and actually the strike wave that broke out in 1918 in Paris was direct resistance to the call of the young military. And the French, my French government actually, the United States has all from May also, like May 15th for me.
In the current issue, I have a report on it.
Oh, Washington. For some reason, Columbia's, I was just reading at Columbia throughout the meeting, and I haven't yet figured out if I can subscribe to things myself. And something went wrong with the subscription. I feel like any time they stopped getting it.
Well, they moved. Now, let's see, it used to be published by David Montgomery at Yale, and now it's published. I don't remember whether it's Illinois or somewhere. And that may have something.
Yeah.
We're supposed to end at 4:30.
Which about that. Yes. Well, I really enjoyed the paper.
Thank you. I enjoyed your
work. You know, I like the way it's written. I was thinking about writing issues a lot now because now that I've done, I'm trying to think about publishing.
Yes, of course.
And I like very much the style.
Thank you. glad we met.
Thank you. I'm almost positive we did meet at the Richard.
Well, actually, I came into the thing. I came into the, to your panel, yeah. Did you wish me an organized that?
Yes.
Yes, I was a little surprised that she didn't include me because she had heard me give a paper on that Richard's time. But I'm a little annoyed.
I think she's a little odd.
Yeah.
Actually. I mean, I don't quite get her, really. But she was, I don't know, she just...
I don't usually talk about people, and I know that when one says something that gets back, but in this case, I don't even mind if it gets back to her.
Yeah, well, I mean, I would...
That's why. I'm very careful, but in this case, I really intend to get it.
You know, I was very...
But she knows my work, and she knows me.
That's really weird, and that was really...
Yeah, I felt like she didn't like us in the panel.
Yeah, she didn't like the people who were on it. You know, and that
she was mad at us, but she knew that I shouldn't say it.
Why do you think she was angry?
Well, I don't know.
Because at the last Berkshire conference, the one in 84, I chaired the panel on which she gave the paper. You know, so, and also, so there's no way that she doesn't know about these things.
Yeah. But you've also given papers at French Historical?
Yes, yes.
See, I just gave one, my first French Historical Society paper last week, actually. Mm-hmm.
How was it? Have you met Laura Frater?
Yes.
Well, she's a good friend of mine, and of course I'm seeing more of her. Yeah, I'm seeing more of her now, but I knew her before. And she's nice, and she went. But I haven't, you know, I was getting ready to come down here, so I haven't called her up to find out about how it went.
Yeah, it was a very interesting panel. Pretty cool.
Wait, how was South Carolina?
Well, you know, to me it kind of confirmed a lot of my prejudices and fears about the South. It really did. I mean, it was this ghost town.
Uh-huh.
And they put some sort of booster literature into our little packets, registration packets.
You mean come and play in the land of kids?
Yeah. In the land of, well, it turned out to be, you know, they have these festivals.
Valletta, they have this, in Charleston, this Italian festival.
Well, this, I mean, you know, forget like ethnic festivals, or anything, like the orchestra, the peanut festival, something else, some other local food. I mean, there were about five food festivals, and then it was like, celebrate the Confederacy. Great. and then the downtown, we were in this Marriott Hotel, right in the center of downtown, Friday and Saturday.
you.